Welcome today to an interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I am conducting an exclusive interview with Kelly Kneister, Vice President of Skills Canada BC, Director Vancouver Island Career Education Association, and Coordinator South Island Partnership. Kelly talks about needed partnerships, apprenticeships, skills, student transition, and educational relevance. Kelly, thank you for sharing your deep experiences and insights with our audience.
Good morning, Stephen, and thank you very much for having me on your program.
Kelly, first of all, can you profile your past history, various roles, and your objectives for the short and long term?
Well, that's quite a question, but it's a great way to start an interview and make your guests feel welcome. So thank you very much. I often get asked this question as I am often in front of students and talking about careers. So I get the envious task of talking about myself. So I'm going to start a little bit from the beginning. As I speak with youth, they are typically at an age I was when I made some very important decisions. So hopefully you'll find my story interesting, as I'm going to take the audience back a little ways and from my perspective into a time when I was in high school, because I think it's very important to understand a little bit about my history. I consider myself a fairly average person, except for the fact that I grew up in a house full of boys. I have three brothers, of which I am the eldest, and felt I should, at the very least, when I was at age in high school, consider myself their equal, and if not more of an equal, their boss from time to time, being the eldest. But what I found was that in high school, I began to see the differences emerge between the sexes, if you will, where my friends were taking on fairly traditional roles, getting into secretarial courses or beauty culture. And although I was an average academic student, I did very well in math and sciences. But I was very active youth, and I liked to play sports and other activities. And I couldn't quite see myself sitting for long periods of time behind a desk. So in my high school, they offered many introductory courses, and so I began to explore exactly what else was out there besides what you would traditionally see in a high school. And I often talk to students about this because I think it's important that they hear stories about people in their youth and making the decisions and getting to where they want to go. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about my story because I think it's relevant. And it provides a context for other folks as they make their decisions or if they're talking to young people. In my high school, they offered what they called an introduction to welding course, and I wasn't even sure I knew what welding was. But I knew I wanted to try something different, and it ended up that in grade 11 for a semester, I spent every other day in the welding shop. I was the only girl. And so that was a bit intimidating, but not too bad because I was pretty used to that as being the only girl in my family and being surrounded by boys most of the time. So I wasn't all that unfamiliar with that, but it really helped me to begin a journey. Every other day I was in the welding shop, and I was very nervous and timid at first, scared of every little pop and bang, little did I know when I actually signed up for the course that I would be in a shop where I'm playing with fire every day. So that was a bit intimidating. As the only girl in the family, my brothers did all the yard work and things like that. I would be more used to helping my mother with ironing and cleaning. And so working in a shop was very unusual for me. But what I found was with the encouragement of my teacher and my fellow students, I began to excel and develop skills required to be a good arc welder and oxyacetylene cutting and all the areas of the welding shop. And I really started to enjoy the program and the skills and the confidence I started to to build as a high school student. And having been pretty much an average student and finding something that I really started to enjoy, and I could see that I could maybe pursue this area. So by the end of grade 12, I was spending the afternoons in the welding shop, and I had developed enough skills that by the end of grade 12, I had graduated with a fairly academic program. I could have chosen to go on and take university courses, although my community didn't have a university. But the community I grew up in was a fairly industrial one, and I very quickly got a job, thanks to my father, who worked in the oil industry, got me a summer job, and I became a welder's helper. So at the end of grade 12, I started this work experience, if you will, exploring the workplace as a welder. I worked one-on-one with a journeyman welder who took me under his wing, basically, and started to teach me all there was about the welding field that he was working in. And it was a great summer. It was a great experience. But by the end of the summer, the employer that I worked with, his name was Jim O'Grady from Five O's Welding up in Fort McMurray, he said, you know what, I think you've worked hard and you're a good worker. I'd like to offer you an apprenticeship. And so that became my journey into the world of trades training. And it was at that time that I also learned that as part of my high school trades training, welding training that I took, I had actually completed a pre-apprenticeship welding program. So I got credit for my high school time towards an apprenticeship, which was a great thing. I was registered as an apprentice, and I worked under the tutelage of Jim O'Grady, who for the next 3 years taught me everything he knew about welding. I learned as much as I could, but of course he had many, many years under his belt as a welder, and so I had much to learn. So that was a great adventure for me. By the time I was 21, I had my journeyman certification, and although I was always the only woman on any job site I worked, I found once I learned the respect of the other welders as a competent worker, I was very well received by the crew. It doesn't mean that there weren't challenges, as there were no other women typically on the work sites that I worked on, and it's fairly a traditional area in those days, which was in the early to mid 80s, where I learned that you know, if you're a good worker and people see you as competent, they will respect you, and I did earn their respect. The last welding job I had, I was working for Syncrude in Fort McMurray, and I was actually a novice foreman. They had provided me with an opportunity to go into management, and I was managing a crew of 12 welders, carpenters, and small engine mechanics. But by that time, I had spent 10 years working in the trade. I had been working shift work, and I had married and gone on to have two small children. So for me, I was close to 30. I had worked very hard and earned lots of money, enough money actually to buy property in British Columbia. So off to Lotus Land, my husband and I went, and I became a full-time mom for a little while. The great thing is that due to the fact that I was making great wages, I was also able to put money away. So when I was ready to retrain, which I did in the early 90s, I went on to BCIT and UBC to enroll in the Technology Education Teacher Education Program. And I spent the next 3 years training to become a technology education teacher. And the reason why I was so passionate about doing that is I was really wanted young women and young people to see that, yes, trades indeed could be for them. There was very few women in the field when I worked in industry, and I thought there was no reason for this. It was basically, you know, I think a fear factor and a comfort level that people get into traditional roles. And so my goal really became to start to get into the system to start helping and working with young people and especially girls to consider going into a trade and thinking about trades as a career because it was very good to me. But again, in the teacher education program, I was one of three, so I was a minority. And again, it was a great experience, learning experience for me. 1994, I graduated from UBC to become one of seven technology education teachers in the province of BC, and I went on to a teaching position very quickly because as a minority in many ways, you can have the upper hand, if you will, in terms of finding employment. So I had several job offers that year when I graduated because schools are very interested in seeing gender equity and seeing an opportunity for that. And so I went and started teaching at Gulf Island Secondary School. 1994, brand new shop, brand new school, so it was a great opportunity for me. And I started teaching there. I was very encouraged by the staff and the students there, and I had for the next 5 years, I spent working with young people and encouraging young girls to come into my shop and to learn all about trades training. But what I found was in the K-12 system, especially here in some communities in British Columbia, there's very, very little emphasis or knowledge of what trades training is all about. So my goal initially was to encourage young girls to get into trades training. But what I found was that everyone needed information about trades training, not only young girls, but also boys. And so my goal began to shift in terms of my focus, and I wanted to help more young people and the school system to understand trades training. And in a building typically that is a focus around academics and for good reason, we need to focus on academics and math and English and sciences and so on. There was nobody in my school that really understood trades training, so I became the voice of trades training, encouraging young people to go into trades, working with local employers, connecting students to workplaces, getting them out on work experiences, and helping them start to make those transitions and linkages with the community, because trades training is all about working and learning and sharing what you know with others. And so that's where my focus began. It was also at about 1999, close to 2000, when the Ministry of Education started to focus on this very topic as well. And so for about 4 years, I worked with the Ministry of Education from 1999 to 2003 to develop programs at a provincial level that helped young people to consider trades and developing programs in communities around the province, which was a wonderful experience for me. Working for government was something I had never really considered. But having the opportunity to develop programming for youth was a great experience, which gave me the knowledge which was in 2003, that I went to work for an organization called the South Island Partnership. And the South Island Partnership is a partnership between five school districts and Camosun College, and it's located here on Southern Vancouver Island, that I began to work with Victoria School District, Sooke School District, Saanich, Gulf Islands, and the Cowichan Valley School District. So together, I work on their behalf in developing programs and supporting students, young students, grades 10, 11, and 12, to start training in trades and to start to look at how they might want to focus their career in these areas. So it's been a great kind of process for me as a young somebody in high school who started trades training. I feel like I've come full circle, and I now get to help develop and support young people here in my community to participate in a similar way in starting their careers and trades. And it sure was a good fit for me. It helped me to build confidence. And that's my goal, is to help young people build confidence and skills so that they can make smooth transitions from high school into the workplace, into the real world, and in many cases, again, onto further post-secondary education. So, my focus started in one area, and I slowly have grown and developed and changed somewhat. One area that I found was really important to me as an educator was the organizations that were focused on the same topic, because they were very hard to find. In most secondary schools, you may have one or two shop teachers who may or may not have been industry trained or have completed apprenticeships. Sometimes there are people that have lots of interest in working in shops, but don't have the background. And so there's very few of us in the education system who really understand what it's all about. And so when an organization like Skills Canada British Columbia, which I got involved with very early as well, comes along, you hop on board because they have the same goal. Their mission is to support and promote careers in trades and technologies for young people, and they have a mandate to host showcases and contests each year in British Columbia that allow high school students to showcase their trades and technology skills. And so that's why I got involved with Skills Canada British Columbia, and I'm the vice president. I've been working with Skills Canada for the past 10 years in different capacities, and today I'm the vice president. So that's one of my volunteer jobs I do on the side of my full-time job. And it's very, very rewarding, again, as well. It's very focused around the notion of promoting and encouraging young people to think about careers and trades and technology. And there's very few of those organizations out in the system. So it's to me, it's an ally. We have a common goal and a shared passion for that topic. So that's where I am today. I work here in Southern Vancouver Island, and I get to do what I love. So I'm very, very happy about that. I know when I left high school, the program I took helped me to transition into the real world, and I believe today that more than ever that our young people need the same kinds of transition programs and supports and relevant programs that ensure that they have the skills and confidence to move beyond high school to make successful transitions into fields of work and study. So, to make the short story short, that's the answer to your question, Stephen. That's kind of my history and story and where I've come from, and I hope that listeners find that of interest. This year we will be hosting the South Island Skills Canada competition at Camosun College on March 26th, and we do that every second year. And so I'm very, very involved with that. So, again, just to focus on promoting careers and trades and technology, and now we've been doing this now for about 6 years, since 2003, and we're starting to expand our programming to include other careers. We started with trades, and we're now moving into healthcare and technologies, which is why I'm very pleased to be speaking with your audience today about the opportunities we are seeking to support youth in partnership with local industry to pursue careers in high-demand fields. When we began our programs in 2003, there was a looming skills shortage in trades, and we did that. We built a number of programs. We started with three 2003, carpentry, welding, and manufacturing. And today we have over 10 different trades training programs that high school students can pursue. We've served over 500 students in those areas, so we've transitioned those students off into the workplaces and now into a further post-secondary education. And now we want to broaden that based on our success. The South Island Partnership wants to broaden our programs and start to expand into other high-demand fields. And and Southern Vancouver Island, for those of you who don't know, of course, has an aging population. We have probably the highest per capita retirees in the province. And so we're looking at how do we support our community, developing programs that help young people transition into employment opportunities in the healthcare field. But Vancouver Island is also a key place, and one of the economic development drivers is technology and high technology. And we have many, many technology businesses here on Vancouver Island. So we're also starting to look at how can we be supporting those industries and how can we help youth in our community transition into those employment opportunities. And we all know the demographics, or we are becoming more and more aware of demographics, that we need to be thinking more about how are we going to fill some of these big gaps that we're going to be seeing in the next 20 to 30 years. So our education system here in the South Island is trying to evolve and be innovative and look at ways in which we can support young people to transition smoothly from high school into local careers. And what we're doing is building programming, relevant programming, to help students do that.
Well, that's a kind of remarkable landscape that you provided us today. And, you know, what's particularly interesting also is that you participated in the Career Education Society conference recently. You know, what messages resonated with you at that conference and why?
Well, thank you, Stephen. Yes, I mean, the Career Education Society is another one of those organizations in the province of BC that is focused on similar goals as to what I'm very interested in. They support career education in the province. And yes, at the conference, I was very pleased to see, for the last 5 years or so, I would say, we've been spending a lot of time talking about trades training, the basic career education. And what I was very pleased to see, and what I heard you say as our keynote speaker one morning, and thank you for that, is that there is other areas. Technology is starting to emerge as one of those areas where there is a demand, that the sector is developing certification credentials and programming, and they want to encourage the education system to become more involved, to focus their attention on technology education. So that's one of the key areas that I started to hear more about this year over previous years. There is recognition now that we've focused on trades. We now need to move into the technology sector, and I'd have to say that across the board. Everyone I talk to in around the province is starting to move in that direction. So it was a very timely message that we heard. But the conference itself is a wonderful opportunity for career practitioners to come together and share and to network. Again, it is basically the only organization in the province that supports career education in this way, by helping to share best practices, to share information. And I really appreciated your timely information to the group in terms of the focus on technologies, information technology. It's interesting how, you know, things cycle through, you know, there's ups and downs, and we need to be constantly observant and moving towards where is the next area of focus? Where do we need to focus our intention as career educators? Because education is a system that is can move very slowly, and we need to be vigilant and keep it relevant. And so I was very pleased to see that, along with many others, we were all starting to move towards how do we support technologies, how can we be working more closely with industry, what is the vision for information technology of the future, and you helped to provide a view of that to us, for many of us who are in the trenches helping to make things happen. We don't always see what's going on, and even in our conversations, Stephen, since then, it's a field that has rapidly been expanding. And for educators, we need to catch up. We need to find out what is going on and how do we support your industry and how do we help youth to make those transition into those areas. So the Career Education Society and their conference is a key player in supporting career educators around the province in trying to do that. So they, I commend them for trying to constantly keep up to date and for bringing in presenters like yourself and to help us stay connected with what's going on and where do we need to pay attention to. So for me, it's helping me to transition now from focusing on trades into technologies and healthcare and so on. And so they are a great supporter for us.
You know, educational relevance is an important challenge today. So what can be done to better align secondary and post-secondary education to support student transitions? And then what is your call to action for the audience out there and who are listening to this podcast?
Well, I mean, the South Island experience, so I have to go back to what I know. The South Island partnership experience has shown us that aligning secondary and post-secondary can be done, but it does take collaboration. Sharing and staying up to date, that is the biggest challenge for the K-12 system. Essentially, in the technology sector, things change so quickly that is very difficult for school districts to be able to afford the changing technology, especially when you think about how often technology is reinventing itself. By the time a school district gets a new computer lab in place, it is typically obsolete. So it's a huge challenge, but we work together, and I know that it's taking place in other regions of the province where school districts and colleges are working together and collaborating. And it's only through those kinds of methods, because in addition, the education to keep up to date is to teach students. It also requires that teachers keep up to date and improve their skills and knowledge, and that requires ongoing mentorship. And so that only happens when we have the systems working together. We have the secondary working with post-secondary and with industry, because industry is changing so quickly that even the post-secondary system has a challenge trying to keep up. So we need, in this area especially, we need to be working closely together. And it can be a challenge because we're not always used to doing that. We are very firmly structured in silos, and so it's breaking down those barriers. How do we work together and keeping that at the forefront? And so that's, my role. It's a challenging role, but it's very, very rewarding. I get to facilitate secondary school teachers sitting down with college instructors, and we invite in industry to help us with identifying where do we need to be focusing our attention, where do these graduates need to be, what kind of entry-level skills do they need, and starting to build those bridges. So it is important, and there are challenges, but based on our experiences, we know that it can work. So I'm really excited about the potential that the models that we've developed to date can help us in other areas. Yeah, I mean, those are kind of the key areas. The big thing that's happening in school districts right now in terms of challenges is they have declining enrollments. So, at a time when we need more people entering into certain fields, we have a shrinking audience. So, I mean, those things are things that we can't really do anything about, but we need to be cognizant of that. And so that's kind of another challenge, but I think for us, the call to action is to encourage local employers to welcome youth into their organizations, to encourage them to pursue a career in their field, to encourage local businesses and corporations to support schools and programs with donations of equipment or funding where possible, to help teachers with training to stay up to date on the latest technology. And like I said earlier, if we don't keep updating, programs then start to become eliminated. They become irrelevant. Students don't really want to take them because their own personal technology is way better than their technology at home. So, or at school, I mean. And so, by supporting, so getting the community involved by supporting the development and maintenance of high school career programs, you support students' transition to further post-secondary education and help them move into the entry-level positions that employers need to fill. This past year, we began a new program to support training high school students in as healthcare assistants. And this is a field where there are significant shortages, and we are pleased to be able to offer such programs, but they can be at risk if we don't continue to support them. So the call to action from my perspective is to have the community and industry to get more involved with supporting career programs. If you are an industry that needs trained and skilled workers in a certain sector, in a certain location, you know, go to your local high school, find out how you can be working with them, work with your local post-secondary institution. Encourage your local post-secondary institution to be working with school districts. What we're finding is as things begin to die in high schools, if programs die in high schools, the job of recruitment and education falls squarely on the post-secondary system. When if you start in secondary, you can help those young people to make decisions earlier to help them make smooth transitions and understand the careers in that sector and move on into further post-secondary education if required or into employment options. So we need the community to support those kind of collaborations and encourage those collaborations. So that's my big message and call to action is to have the community working together with education and encouraging them to work together.
You know, you sort of touched on this already, but maybe explore it a little bit deeper, and that is how are you forging then industry, community, and education partnerships?
Well, great question. I mean, it's not easy because as an educator, your head is down and you're kind of working as hard as you can. And same with industry. They're working hard and they don't know how to connect with education. But we basically started with cold calls. You know, we need industry involvement and started phoning initially associations, so organizations that represent large groups that may have the same kinds of goals. And so we're always looking for ways to develop these relationships now. It's part of our business plan and how we work. We currently have strong relationships built with the construction and marine industry here in the South Island because we've been working on this file for the last 5 or 6 years. We work together with the Vancouver Island Construction Association and the marine industry, which is a larger organization, including the Department of National Defense and local employers who are in the shipbuilding and maintenance field. So we've been working very closely with them. Together, we host career fairs, Skills Canada events, activities. The employers are developing work experience programs and apprenticeship programs specifically for high school students. So we've kind of been mucking around in this for a little while, and we've got a bit of success and history, but what we also found is it varies from sector to sector as to what they have the ability to do. We're starting to engage now with the healthcare sector, but they, of course, they're highly organized, and they have a Vancouver Island. It's the Vancouver Island Health Authority, And so we're working with that organization. And now in the technologies is an area we want to pursue, and we're going, okay, well, who is the audience? Where do we need to go? So we're starting with the Vancouver Island Advanced Technology Council and here in Victoria, and we're looking to build bridges between the system. The technology sector is a little bit not as easy to find, I think. I know they're there, but how do we connect with them? And so it's always an exploration. It's an adventure. And so that's what we're engaging in now, is trying to find those kinds of opportunities and find them to encourage them to get involved with us. So that's kind of where we've gone and where we'd like to go. But we're always looking at how we can forge those relationships. And it's a bit of a challenge, because we often speak different languages, education and industry or business. It does take a little while for us to understand each other and what our challenges are. So every sector is a little bit different, but through our partnerships and our development, we are trying to forge ongoing, and I encourage, again, industry community to get involved with education partnerships and support programming, especially in areas if your industry is interested in pursuing relationships, to go ahead and contact your local post-secondary institution and school districts to see how you can get involved.
It's interesting that you're reaching out and you're interested in reaching out to community, but there's this whole concept of apprenticeship. So why is that an exemplary model for education?
Well, it's a good question, and because there's very few people in many education systems, especially in school districts, that understand it, but I consider it an exemplary model of education, because it's basically you have a one-to-one ratio, one student to one teacher. You're as an apprentice, the student, you are learning every day on the job. You are partnered with a sponsor or a journeyman, somebody who's trained and has completed an apprenticeship, who hopefully has a lot of experience. In my case, the journeyman I worked with had 25 years experience. So here I am, somebody who's basically a rookie, a greenhorn, if you will, partnered with somebody with 25 years experience, teaching me everything I need to know to do the job that I've been hired to do. So here I am being paid to learn every day and being taught by a master in his field for a three-year period. I don't know how it can get any better than that. I worked as an apprentice. I completed an apprenticeship. I've gone on and done I completed a diploma at BCIT. I've completed a degree at university. And I've actually last year completed a master's degree through an online format. But I have to say, out of all the four education models that I've participated in, the apprenticeship model is a great model, because you do get your passing information, skills, knowledge from generation to generation, basically, and you're getting the benefit of all of the training that the journeyman or your sponsor has, and they're teaching you along the way. So for me, getting paid to learn and to work is a wonderful thing, and to have that kind of access to expertise and somebody to patiently teach you, not always so patiently in some cases, but you know, it's a great model, an exemplary model of education. And I mean, we see it replicated in other ways. A lot of post-secondary programs will have co-op programs, so where students go out on work terms, or in education programs to become a teacher, you go out and do a practicum. It's the same concept. You're working, you're partnered up with somebody that has knowledge, skills, and experience to teach you and mentor you along the way, and coach you. So, I mean, it's the same, but in an apprenticeship, it's a much longer period of time. And once again, I mean, for the apprentice, it's great because you're getting paid. oftentimes if you're taking a post-secondary program, you're paying to go and work. So I'd have to say the apprenticeship model was very good in many, many different ways.
You know, you talked about your involvement with Skills Canada and Skills Canada BC. So what are the goals of Skills Canada and how can the audience participate?
Well, thank you very much for this question because Skills Canada is an organization that is has a focus on and its goals are to promote youth going into and exploring careers in trades and technologies. And their focus is on youth, and youth meaning 29 and under. So they work with post-secondary students, with secondary students, even with middle school students. They have a program basically that focuses on students from grade 6 all the way up to 29 years of age. And so their goals are broad and they're varied. Skills Canada, British Columbia, is a nonprofit organization, and it's run by a board and it has an executive director. And up to this point, it's been funded by government, by the federal government and the provincial government. And so we've been running, fairly smoothly for the last decade under that type of a model. But today, the funding we've been notified that the funding has been cut from the provincial government. And so now we are focusing our attention on looking for other sources of support. And what we think is we're going to need the public support, meaning, the private industry, business, corporations, to help us in this now. The public dollars are dwindling for various reasons, and we now need to turn our attention to engage with industry sectors to help us with promoting this message. And I really encourage the audience to think about how important trades and technology careers are to them, and if they are, to help get involved. We're looking for, of course, volunteers always, but today now we're looking for financial contributions to help with the organization. As an educator, in the K-12 system, Skills Canada was the only organization in the province of BC that was actually out there promoting and encouraging. In other areas of the high school I was in, there was all kinds of focus on the development and careers in other areas, but nothing going on in trades and technology. So Skills Canada provides that avenue for young people, for schools, for teachers to focus attention and showcase trades and technology careers. And so my messaging is that we need to continue that. We need to make sure that Skills Canada has the ability to continue to do that for grade 6 students all the way up to 29-year-olds, to be a part of our education system. If people want to get involved, I encourage them to go to our website, to the Skills Canada BC website. It's www.skillscanada.bc.ca to find out about what Skills Canada does. We host annually 12 regional competitions around the province so that students, young people, middle school students and high school students can showcase their skills, and it's a way of promotion. It's kind of, it's an Olympic event, if you will. Students come together and showcase their skills and vie and compete for top ranking to move on to a provincial event. So the gold medal winners from regionals will travel to provincials hosted in Abbotsford in April. So the regional events are actually just starting to get underway now in February and March. In April, the provincial event will take place. And the gold medal winners from the provincial event will go on to the national event. And the gold medal winners from the national event will go on to the world event. And so it's a large, large organization. It's a worldwide organization, and British Columbia is one of many, many players in this. There's also an organization called Skills Competence Canada, which is the national organization. And so we work together with them in promoting trades and technologies and through a competitive model where young people get to showcase their skills. And it helps to provide that vision for young people to see that, yes, indeed, careers in trades and technology are valued, and they are an area where you want to focus. And so for anybody who wants to know more about Skills Canada British Columbia, I encourage you to go to our website. If you're interested in getting involved, we sure appreciate any organization getting involved and helping us with our goals. So thank you for that opportunity.
You know, we also hear about beyond the secondary experience and getting over the hump. What is meant by this?
Well, I think what we're starting to see, research is telling us that students are challenged to make smooth transitions from their high school experience beyond into either further post-secondary education or into employment. We're hearing from employers who are challenged with entry-level employees that don't have the skills or attitudes or abilities to be in the workplace. And a lot of students are struggling with getting over that hump, getting beyond the high school, getting into gainful employment or onto further post-secondary education. We hear from post-secondary that students are going on into post-secondary but not being very successful and dropping out after their first year or moving on to other things, which is, you know, not to say that, you know, that's not a bad thing. I mean, it does take a while to figure out what you want to do or where you want to focus. But I think what we're starting to hear now is that it's not as smooth as it could be. We need to be helping those young people making smoother transitions, getting over that hump, if you will, of moving beyond the high school experience. And high schools are great. They provide an avenue for students to learn basic skills and gain a focus and prepare for the world. But still and for all, it's kind of a environment where students have a lot of flexibility, and they don't always are aware of the rigors of what is expected beyond high school. And that includes many, many factors. But we need to be working more and talking more about how do we help our young people make those smooth transitions, get over the hump, help prepare them. And that's, again, why we do what we do. We're developing programs and trying to provide relevance and support for students to make those smooth transitions. But it's a challenge, and it's really important for us to understand that and help them to get there. Because it's not, I don't believe it's going to get any easier. I think, this generation and generations to come are going to be challenged to move into the real world, if you will, and get involved with how things work. We need to be supporting them in that. And it takes, again, a whole community to help build those supports for students. So we all need to get involved.
What are the top lessons and tips that you can share from the projects you have worked on and from your leadership roles?
Well, I guess I don't want to take too much time, but one of the things I want to say is the lessons we have learned in bridging the systems is that it's a worthwhile venture. It's a challenge. It's a challenge working between the systems, breaking down the silos. And I think we need to recognize we need to keep doing it. It's a worthwhile struggle. We need to find ways to remove barriers for students' transition, and that requires teamwork. All the systems need to understand and work together to help make the system streamlined and smooth. It requires collaboration and out-of-the-box thinking often. So it's kind of breaking out of the old molds and kind of looking at things anew and going, okay, you know, where are current practices getting us, and how can we be, how important are they, and how can we be modifying things to make the system work for its clients rather than the other way around. So that's number one, is having a collaborative environment is key. We need to have employers and businesses a key part of transition solutions. They are really, really important, and they need to be part of this. And that's a lesson we've learned, is they need to be involved, and we need to be working closely with them. And it can be a struggle for everybody because everybody's busy, but we know we need to do that. And the third lesson is you don't know until you try. And so we keep trying various things, and we need people to have that kind of attitude. Let's try it. You don't know what will happen until you try. We don't know if something's going to work until we try it. So let's try something new, and let's give it a shot. So those are key lessons that I've learned, and in my leadership is being very open and interested in supporting and seeing the other's point of view and making things work, trying to be flexible. So those are the key leadership areas that I've learned and that we found really makes a big difference in developing these kinds of programs and supporting youth.
So let's kind of step back now and maybe look at this sort of interview from a broader standpoint, and we're getting to our last question here.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see as the top challenges facing us today, and how do you propose they be solved? Or looking at it from another way, if you were conducting this interview, what questions would you ask, and what would be your answers?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, the top challenges facing us today, and how do you propose they be solved? I think our top challenges are are shrinking. And I don't know if there's not an answer to that. Our enrollment is shrinking. Our funding is shrinking. So really it takes, innovation and collaboration to be working together. Because as things start to shrink, people tend to want to kind of, you know, shut the doors and close the windows and not, you know, put themselves out there because they want to hang on to what they've got. But what we really need is people to be, you know, looking, sharing and talking about how we can work together and how can we collaborate and work as a team to find the answers. Because things are going to change whether we like them to or not. It's just demographically, our shrinking population, our retirement, the workplace is going to have to change as a consequence, and as a result, that's going to affect the workplaces and what students can expect when they go into those workplaces. And we need to be working together to help support that. Things are changing; they're changing rapidly, so we need to be on top of that, and we need to be working together to help support students in their transitions into this new work environment. So that's, I think, the top challenges is that kind of shrinking environment where we've got to now look at how things are changing and how we can respond to that. If I were conducting this interview, what questions would I ask? Well, I mean, you're the interviewer, and I think you've put together a great list of questions. You were able to draw out all the things that I think I have to offer, and I was able to also get my message out, which is, you know, we want to see and we want to work more closely with industry, specifically from my perspective, with the technology sector, and to get them engaged and encourage them to get involved. It's only in terms of the education, it is more and more difficult, and the only way in which we can help address some of these shortage areas and areas where we need more people is to work together. And so I want to thank you very much for having me on your program and for allowing me to get my message out and for listening.
Well, Kelly, it's been a real pleasure talking with you today, and I know your schedules are really demanding, so, you know, we're really fortunate, and thank you for sharing your substantial wisdom with our audience.
Thank you very much, and thanks to your audience. I hope to hear from folks real soon. We can be found on Camosun College website at www.camosun.ca/link, LYNC.
I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Kelly Kneister, Vice President, Skills Canada, BC, Director, Vancouver Island Career Education Association, and Coordinator, South Island Partnership. Kelly talked about needed partnerships, apprenticeships, skills, student transition, and educational relevance.